the song of angry men. It is the music of a people who will not be slaves again. When the beating of your heart echoes the beating of the drums, there is a life about to start when tomorrow comes.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, Mace Windu's forces are stretched thin. He must convince Twi'lek freedom fighter Sham Syndulla to help him save the capital city of Lasu from destruction. There will be parkour Jedi action, baby kissing, and Viva La France! We are talking about Liberty of Ryloth this week. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing good.
That's good. I'm doing much better than last week.
We're finally getting some nice weather here, so there's sunshine and nice warm. It's great. I got all my windows open. I'm inside, of course.
I'm the same way. I'm like, I love the sun, but I'll like work at, like by the window and not go outside.
I wonder how fun it would be to set up to podcast from outside with like the birds tweeting and stuff.
You might be able to hear the birds though, Molly, because like my setup is right beside my window, which is open. So you might hear a bird or a plane.
Well, that was you. Was that you the one week we were recording? It might be on one of our shows that I haven't edited yet, where the bird landed right outside my window and was like tripping on it. I was like, "Can you hear that?"
One thing, let me know if it gets too loud too, because we have like a airport that's like a few miles from our house, so sometimes planes can get loud, so let me know if it's
too loud. I haven't heard one yet, so that's a good sign.
And I'm doing much better because I don't have a hell trip to the post office this week, as the listeners heard last week.
Yeah, that all turned out well though. You got your t-shirt, it's all
in your past. Yeah, and I got a cool shirt to go with the shirt, so. But I've lost my train of thought, sorry.
T-shirt trauma's over. You're so giddy with relaxation now that you just don't know what to do or say.
Not quite. It's me. I work four jobs. I always have shit to do. Yeah. I'm never relaxed. I'm always in a constant stage of, like, mild panic.
Excellent.
So, I know. Always in a mild panic stress stage, always, but I've learned how to manage it.
Yeah, my job's...
There are various amounts of stress.
My job's getting back in. Now that the weather's getting nice, it's getting back into barbecue season, so it's starting to become more... Less just sort of managing my job to so I do it over the course of the day than, you know, a hell run from the beginning of the shift to the end of the shift to keep everything caught up, which is how I like it, but it is tiring.
Yeah, I know the next month for me will be crazy because we have Free Comic Book Day the first Saturday in May.
Yeah.
And then the weekend after, my best friend is getting married, so I had to go two states away to her wedding.
Nice.
So I'm going to have several crazy, crazy weeks. So, but hey, we should talk about Star Wars.
Yes, we should.
You want to just jump right into it?
Oh, I think I'm ready to do that.
Yes, it's another Wet Blanket Windu episode. So, Liberty on Ryloth was the 21st episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and it aired on March 13th, 2009. It was written by Henry Gilroy and directed by Rob Coleman. And some extra information for you. This is the first appearance of Sham Syndulla, who is Hera Syndulla's father from Star Wars The Clone Wars. The Ark of the Covenant, a very famous ancient biblical artifact, as seen in Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, which was which was written and produced by George Lucas, can be seen being loaded onto Tambor's shuttle with other treasures of Ryloth. The only difference is the golden cherubs have been replaced with golden Twi'leks. An earlier version had Mace rescuing Captain Twi'lek from a prison suspended over a volcano. However, Early's designs ended up looking too much like Mustafar, and the story was changed. Shams Syndulla was originally supposed to be allied with the Separatists, working for Wat Tambor and lying to the Twi'lek people. He was to escape with the Separatist shuttle. However, due to complications, Syndulla was changed to a freedom fighter. And George Lucas specifically asked for the Twi'leks to have a French accent. Shams Syndulla's character was not originally inspired by freedom fighters of the French Revolution, but those themes were later explored as Dave Filoni and Henry Gilroy changed the script to make him a freedom fighter.
Interesting.
Did you see the Raider?
I didn't catch it. No, I didn't at all.
It's very small. It's in the background. It's one of the scenes where like Wat Tambor and Tapas, who is the bot I named in this episode, I named him Tapas, because they're delicious. They were talking, and you can see Twi'leks like loading stuff into a ship in the background. And when the scene starts, there are the two Twi'leks that are like on the actual ramp carrying it up the ramp. So yeah.
I'll have to go back and check it out. What's funny is yesterday I was looking for some more screensavers, and I found, I don't know who the artist is. It wasn't the actual artist, but there's an artist who will do these very detailed, almost like Where's Waldo pictures with all sorts of people walking around and stuff. And he did a Star Wars one with all sorts of people hanging around the Millennium Falcon. But of course it had like Marvel and DC heroes. It had all sorts of characters in it, and then one corner of it, it had like Indiana Jones trying to check the Ark of the Covenant through customs, and like Admiral Ackbar behind him, and like Boba Fett with frozen Han Solo all waiting to go through customs.
Oh, that's fantastic!
It was so detailed. I had to actually like put the picture into my Photoshop and like blow it up to like check out all the details on it.
I always love photos like those. So, as always with Jegas and Jedis, we tell you the... Sorry. Sorry. We tell you the... That was actually not on purpose. Sorry.
Huh?
We tell you the moral of the episode in a very sexy, very sensual, very loving Yoda voice.
Compromise is a virtue to be cultivated, not a weakness to be despised. In bed.
You okay over there? Yeah. You sounded like you were just drowning in your own
space
butt.
Pollen.
Yeah, in the same way. That's why I started coughing, because like we said earlier, we have windows open, so we're all inhaling pollen right now. This will be a very coffee episode of Two True Freaks. Not Two True Freaks. Jegas and Jedis, but also part of the Two True Freaks Network. Anyway.
You can go with the wider umbrella if you'd like.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so I'm ready to get right into Act 1.
All right, let's do this.
And I love when I'm looking through my notes and I'm just like, look at all the shit I misspelled because I forgot to check this beforehand. So, oh, I put Republic instead of Republic. RuPaul's Republic, drag race. Trace. Oh, man, I just imagine RuPaul as the Emperor and just being fabulous.
I heard he's in episode 9.
Is he really? Oh, you got me really excited there. Well, because there's been like all these talks about J.J. Abrams is like, yes, we're going to bring a gay character into Star Wars, which I'm just like, yeah. But I thought you were being serious. Because if it was RuPaul, that'd be fabulous. And also kind of stereotypically terrible. So,
RuPaul anyway. Would make a great alien. RuPaul would be similar in movies as to when they used Grace Jones back in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
RuPaul could probably do a great, like, crazy alien type of character.
Oh, he would. Oh, man. Maybe, like, if he is, like, an alien fashion designer. But, like, it's one of those things that he also, like, he's a fashion designer. I'm saying this because I'm straight up, like, talking from one of my role plays with one of my best friends. Because I have a character just like what I'm about to describe. But he's, like, a fashion designer. So he's like, yes, the Empire. I love the Empire. But on the side, he's actually, like, making clothes and hiding propaganda.
He's the guy who forged Captain Phasma's outfit out of the old Naboo fighters, you know, the Naboo royalty ships.
But like it's like bigger than that. Like he'll buy a print and like sew in like maps. So like when they walk the runway, like the rebellion can look at this dress and be like, okay, that's a map. But while all the Empire's just like, yay, we love it. It's beautiful. That'd be fantastic.
I wouldn't hold my breath for the gay alien fashion designer character.
Who was actually making propaganda in his clothes and secretly designing, kind of like Senna from Hunger Games.
I still haven't watched any of the Hunger Games. I get the books. I'm going to read the books first.
Yeah, they look like fast reads. I really loved the first two books. I hated the third book. Like, absolutely despised it.
Interesting.
But I love, in that same vein, I loved the first two movies, and I just haven't had a chance to see Mockingjay yet. Yet a lot of people said, like, they hated the third book, but they loved the movie. The movie did, so.
Interesting.
I haven't seen it yet. So, anyway, Act 1 with not RuPaul's Drag Empire.
Oh, yeah, that's where we were going.
Yeah, you know, our show.
The show, right.
The thing with the show, you know, yeah. All right. The Republic invasion of Ryloth is going well. Anakin battles in the sky. Obi-Wan is rescuing small towns from Separatist leader Wat Tambor's clutches. All that's left is to recapture the capital city of Lesu, bringing us to... Say it all together, kids! Wet Blanket Windu!
My hero!
I love you, Wet Blanket Windu! Get the fuck away from me! Here's the situation. Windu is leading a trail of AT-TE walkers along a very narrow cliff ledge. Across the gorge, it's easy pickings for the Separatist tanks. His front tank goes down as our favorite Three Stooges droids are actually being quite brilliant for once. Windu orders clone commander Pons to get the Lightning Squad, a small unit of clones riding on AT-RT walkers. Wet Blanket calls upon the Force to push the damaged tank off the cliff and clears the road. Windu hopes that the hops on a walker and leads his Lightning Squad across the path right up to the enemy tanks. The Lightning Squad easily destroys the tanks. As Windu and Commander Pons discuss their losses and their plans, they don't see the recon droid watching them. Tambor also knows that Windu doesn't have the manpower to take back the capital. He calls his men back inside the walls to secure it. In a holo Skype meeting, Anakin says he's retaken the skies of Ryloth. Kenobi's troops have retaken the southern hemisphere of the planet. Windu points out that retaking the capital won't be easy. There's a plasma bridge that's the only way in and out of the city. They could siege the city, but Twi'lek Senator Orn Futaa argues that his people have suffered enough already. Windu wants to enlist the help of freedom fighter Sham Syndulla, who is the symbol of the people. Palpatine argues that Sham was a radical before the war ever started, and Senator Tal is against it. Syndulla is his political rival and only wants to gain power. Windu don't got time for this political bull and will do what's necessary to free the Twi'leks. Mace, with clones Razor and Stack, follow tracks of the creatures that Syndulla's men ride. They arrive in the flatlands where a massacre occurred and comment about the gravestones. They hear a noise from the creatures and move out. Windu and his men hide out as a platoon of battle droids pass by. They hear shots firing and rush the hill to find Shan Syndulla and his men. Windu asks for his help and Sham responds, "What makes you think you'll get any?" Wow, what a first act! Ugh! Usually the first acts are like 3 minutes tops. Like this first act was like 7 minutes
long. Yeah, it was a good way into the episode.
Yeah, it laid down like so much of the politics.
This is how you do politics in Star Wars. It had like a little more on the ground meaning to it. Although I have to say, I was just sort of the first act of this. I was just sort of watching it, going, "Okay, this is a pretty good episode." There wasn't, the visuals of it weren't doing much for me, so I was just sort of following along with it. But the first thing I noticed is Wet Blanket Windu is either Mr. Mellow Windu in this or Mr. Badass Motherfucker Windu in this.
I know, I was the same
way
too.
He's not angry at all in it. It's like, oh, maybe when he gets to fight, you know, that he can you know, put his anger towards that, and he's pretty mellow towards everybody else.
Because I think I had a note about that, too. I think I had it, like, maybe in the third act or something. But I actually, like, really like Windu in this episode. Because he actually seems kind of personable.
He's relaxed, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, it's still a fight, so, because a lot of times, like, when he's, like, talking to Anakin, you know, he's, like, strict wet blanket, but, like, this is, like, a really good side of Windu. We get to see him both be a badass and see him actually really caring for the people.
I think he...
Like, this is what I always want to see from Windu, and this is probably one of his more interesting episodes.
He might only be an ass towards the other Jedis, maybe. It seems like when he's dealing with the locals, he's just sort of like, hey, so we got to do this and this and this and this and him. Hey, what's up? And, you know, it's just.
And then Anakin walks in and he's just like, get up.
Get to work. Yeah.
I don't accept you as the chosen one.
I was calling those little walkers ostrich walkers. They look like ostrich.
Oh, yeah.
At first I thought emus, but I'm like, and I guess emus are sort of like that too, but I'm like, no, it's an ostrich. That's what they look like. They got the big old legs.
I love emus. There used to be an emu farm across the street from my old house that I grew up in. And I would just, like, stand across the street and, like, watch them, because if you actually approach the fence, they'd be...
Fun birds.
No, they're not. So I would just, like, sit across the street and watch them. But I really like those walkers. Like, they're so, like, tiny and quick, and they can leap fireballs in a single bound.
They're neat. But I was thinking in, like, real life, they wouldn't be very fun. They wouldn't be a very comfortable ride, you know?
No.
It looked neat running along there, but they'd probably, like, just, like, kill your knees and legs and back.
Yeah.
But they're great to watch.
Like, I know, like, tech and, like, weapons is definitely not my strong point when it comes to Star Wars. So do you know if the Lightning Squad's little walkers were, like, prototypes for the big walkers, like, later in, like, Star Wars Rebels and the original trilogy?
Oh, sure. I'm sure they were consciously trying to back engineer stuff, you know, this was going to be the seeds for these. I mean, they may have already had walkers like that. This was just their beginning of them. And that's another thing in Star Wars is that the sort of, when you have factions and stuff, they have a sort of design consistency to them. So the Imperials like the, you know, these things with two legs, you know, with legs that, like, walk around, whether they're, like, beetle-like or walker-like, where they have long spindly legs or, you know, two legs like the AT-STs. So I think they definitely were trying to, you know, make it a sort of proto version of the walkers, just like the clone armor is a proto stormtrooper armor.
Yeah. And the only other note I had from Act 1 was I really like the character of Orn Frutah and, like, what he represents, because his people are starving and they're getting killed and they're fighting themselves and they're getting their hands dirty. And he's safe on Coruscant and he's clearly fat and eating well, and he just represents, like, what terrible government leaders really are.
Yeah, he's more like... His people are in danger, and he's more, like, concerned about his, you know, that this guy might be trying to get his position and get to the buffet table, you know.
Yeah, and we see in, like, later episodes, the one that comes to my mind at the moment is, I think it's the one with Satine, where they're transporting Satine and all the senators, and, like, he's just a big coward.
I always forgot that because he was showing, he was in the prequels, too, just sort of hanging out in the background. And I never really realized that he was a Twi'lek because he was so large.
So big.
He looked like just another creature with that sort of growths coming off the back of his head. And then it's just like, oh, okay.
You're a fat Twi'lek.
He's not supposed to look like that.
Yeah. So I've always liked what his character just kind of represents. Because we see Ryloth several times throughout the series, and he is always fat, and his people are always dying. So, I don't have anything else for the first act, do you?
No, I'm good.
I know, but I'm actually, after, like, the last several episodes, I'm actually light notes this week.
Yeah, I was very surprised. Especially since we're sort of in Hope's dream arc right now. Hope's dream arc.
Actually, like, we're done with my top favorite episodes. So there's only one other episode I'm, like, super excited about, which is next week, because my favorite villain of the show arrives.
Yeah.
We finally get to Cad Bane. I'm so excited.
I think that might be, and I might be wrong on this, but that might be a George Kurstick episode.
Oh, we'll have to look into it. We'll see you next week when I write the notes. because I don't know. But yeah, like next week we get like Cad Bane. We also get Aura Singh, who I also really like a lot. So, but Cad Bane's my favorite villain of the entire show. It'd just be so easy for them to always use him, and I love him so much. So, on to Act 2.
Let's do it.
Alrighty. Sham takes Windu and his men back to his hideout. He says the massacre in Graves that they saw was because the Republic didn't come to help. The Separatists fired on unarmed people to try and exterminate them. Clone Stack checks out one of Syndulla's riding creatures called Blurgs. I love their names.
It sounds like vomiting.
Blurg!
I know, I definitely have a note about these creatures and their names. A Twilight says that it's faster than the Republic's Lightning Squad walkers, and Stack is not impressed. Sham takes them into the main room where his people gather. He kisses some babies and encourages his men to rest because they will be needed in the coming fight. Count Dooku is not happy with Wat Tambor's performance on Ryloth. He wants Tambor to take all the Twilight artifacts and get and destroy everything, including the people. Then Tambor must get the hell out of Ryloth Dodge. Tambor and the other leader, a technical droid named TA-175, who we're going to call Tapas, aren't seeing eye to eye. Tambor believes that he can still win, but Tapas is going to keep the evacuation on schedule. Tapas and Tambor send out their bombers to target inhabited Twi'lek villages within range. Commander Pons and his men are on the outskirts of a village that is mostly full of women and children. He orders his men to gather any spare rations because they will be hungry. Suddenly, the bombers arrive and destroy the village. Sham throws a small party for Windu as is tradition on Ryloth. Windu compliments Sham on how well he's done for his soldiers and his people, but Windu questions why the fighters won't help him free the capital. Sham doesn't trust Senator Tal or his plans for the planet after the Clone Wars. Sham wants to ask when the Republic comes to help rebuild, will they leave their troops? Windu says for a little while. Sham doesn't like it. Any soldier, whether they're from the Republic or the Separatists, is still in occupation and it is not a free Ryloth. He asks Windu poignantly, how long until I am fighting you? It's when Pons calls in and tells Windu about Tambor's firebomb campaign that Sham changes his mind to at least speak with Senator Tal. Sham and Holoscape Senator Tal get right into a snarking match about who's the real leader of the people. Mace shuts them both up to get them to compromise. Anakin's currently leading an air mission to try and stop the bombers from hitting the cities, but he can already see he won't get all of them. Windu tells Anakin that he's going to meet him at the Capitol. While with Windu guiding them, Senator Tal assures Sham that the clone army will leave once Ryloth is free. Sham agrees that he will not use his people's freedom to steal power from Senator Tal. Sham rallies his men for the coming battle. Tambor is getting greedy. He wants all the treasures he can before he leaves Ryloth. Dooku's fed up with him and gives an order to Tapas to get out of there and bomb the city from afar once the Jedi arrive. Tambor declares that Tapas won't do anything, but Tapas is a protocol droid. Dooku's orders outrank Tambor's. Ugh. Long, long, long things.
This is where this act is where it really started to click for me. I was just like, wow, this is where it really started to come together. And man, it's very Star Wars. You know, the politics involved in it were sort of set up at the beginning, and now they come into play in this one in battle and action and characters, you know, and with things at stake. I mean, there's they sort of gloss over it a little bit, but a whole city, a village of women and children is wiped out. You see the clone, that's a striking image, the clones just sort of standing on the hilltop.
Yeah, the whole and city like you burning. Can see, yeah, like Commander Pons is clearly upset.
Well, they, at first they're like, oh, this is bad, and then they're like, oh, this is really, you know, it starts sinking, you know, and you're sort of the success of this episode is you're there with them, you're going like, oh shit, that whole city's burnt, and then you're like, oh shit, everybody in there's dead, you know, it's they're looking at a whole village just wiped out.
It's a nice little bit of voice acting by Dee Bradley Baker, because you can hear how upset Pons is when he says contact General Windu. He sounds like both sad and very angry at the same time. It's a quick little snippet, but Dee Bradley Baker did good in that, like, really one moment.
I mean, this to me might be sort of like, to you, last episode of, like, just a great, perfect episode of Clone Wars for me, or near perfect episode, because when this starts, like, visually, it picked up, and I went from just sort of watching it and paying attention to getting sucked right into it, and they were making great use of that Star Wars trope that especially got more used in the prequels of cutting back and forth between several battles and different storylines. Great use of the holoscope. It visually looked really neat and worked really well. And like the cutaways to Anakin in the sky fighting, which all of a sudden were a totally different visual palette. You know, they went from this sort of, you know, darker on the ground sort of deserty thing to blue, you know, and I like how you see Anakin, he just sort of checks in, hey, we'll try to kick everybody's ass, and then he speeds off, and then just so you know, Ahsoka's there, you see Ahsoka pull up, and then vroom, she pulls off. And it's kind of cheesy and it's kind of awesome at the same time. And it just kept it moving along and feeling really Star Wars-y to me. I really enjoyed the second act. The only thing that was, I think, that kind of went wrong with was Tambor's voice is boring as far as Star Wars sound design. It's just some guy's voice pitched down. So it's like a little, a little deeper. But,
well, remember from not last week's episode, but the week before, I had a note that his voice actor is actually one of the sound designers for The Force Awakens, and he was nominated for an Oscar for it.
For sound design there, yeah, but, well, he's come along.
Yeah, but not as a voice actor. As a voice actor, he didn't work for you.
I mean, his voice acting was okay, but just I expected a weirder voice to come out of there, you know, and what they did was, you know, they took his lines and they pitched him down, and it reminds me of exactly what it sounds like when I've done that, like, for a bit on a podcast. It's really simple, but it just sort of makes you sound like you're, it doesn't make you sound like you have a deeper voice. It makes you sound like you're fat. you know what I mean? That quality. You know how you picture, not like a real fat person, but like how you picture a fat, fat voice, you know? You know what I'm saying? And when you,
I was about to say, I don't think fat people have a specific kind of voice.
No, it's not like you're
fat and you have an accent. But I see what you're saying now. Yeah, the stereotypical cartoon, like, I'm a big guy.
Well, because the first time I used pitch down, okay, I was trying to pitch my voice down so that I sounded like what's his name? Barry White. You know Barry White?
Yeah.
The soul singer. You know, he's got that deep, creamy voice, you know, hey lady, and then it was a hey ladies type thing. And so I was like, yeah, but my voice just doesn't have the is more nasally than deep. So it's like, okay, I'll pitch down my voice and see if I can do it, and instead of becoming, you know, creamy and rich and James Earl Jones, like, it just became sort of like, hey everybody. and that's what I would think of whenever I'd hear Watt Tambor's voice. Like, I almost wanted them to add, this is so like techie nerdy, but, you know, some sort of little like fizzle to the side of it, or a little electronic distortion to it. To
make, yeah, because he has that thing where he has to adjust his voice.
He's got his mouthpiece and he's got, yeah, almost maybe make his voice sound like it's coming through a radio that's getting, you know, someone tuning in a radio or something.
Yeah.
Or a little feedback, or a little weird, you know, AM radio feedback on his voice would have been really cool. It would have been goofy, but goofy is, yeah. They're not.
Yeah, I mean, because, like, I also, like, that was the first time we saw that, like, I think that was the first time we saw him, like, adjusting his voice that way. He might have done it in one of the first episodes, but I don't recall it. Like, it was actually very prominent. So I kind of wish they did that more in the last two Ryloth episodes, because Watt Tambor's, this is his third episode. So I kind of wish they had brought that more in earlier.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about it too much because it was a very small detail, but it was the only thing that kind of was like, well, they could have spent a little more, made his voice a little more interesting, but you know, with all the rest of everything going on, kind of who cares?
That's the most minorest detail as we talk about it for 5 minutes.
Yeah, I was, I watch this. I try to watch these like the day before we do the show. You know, as close to when we do the show as possible, so it's fresh in my mind. Especially when we're doing multiple, you know, we're releasing shows and we're recording shows that are way in the future of it. So just to keep it fresh in my mind. So I watched it last night, and I'd come home from work, and I was just exhausted. And I was like, all right, I got to watch this thing. And
hey, that's a really good Walt Tim Burr impression.
No, thank you. And about halfway through it, I was just completely, I'd forgotten that I'd even worked out. I was just like, yes, Star Wars.
I had that over the weekend. I'm making, well, she doesn't listen to podcasts, so I can say this.
You're not going to spoil a gift surprise or something? I thought you were going to talk some smack on something.
A, by the time this episode comes out, B, she doesn't listen to podcasts. So, like, me and two of the bridesmaids for my best friend's wedding, since we've known her since middle school, and we're all, like, in our mid-late 20s, so we're making her a scrapbook for her wedding present, because we have just, like, years and years and years of pictures and memories and stuff like that. Well, we went to Michael's, and I kept having to get drug away from the Star Wars stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's
so I found a sticker book and had stickers from, like, both the original trilogy, the prequels, and fucking Clone Wars. They had, like, Rex and Commander Wolf stickers and Commander Cody and Commander Bly from a few episodes ago, and I was just like, what?
I've been tempted to buy those stickers.
It was a Lego Star Wars book.
Yes. I think where I saw it was either in a Michael's or it was in some or Joanne Fabrics. It was in a craft store, and it was... I remember it being remarkably cheap, and I was like, this is not that expensive. And then there's something about seeing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of tiny little stickers just lined up on the page that pushes something deep, deep in my nerd brain of like, that's cool.
Yeah,
but there's also something in my nerd brain that doesn't want to peel a single one of those stickers off of there.
Exactly. Like I kept looking at the Rex one because it was actually pretty. It's the Rex one was bigger than the actual Rex Lego I own. So I was like, I need this, and I need to stick it on things. Oh my god! So I looked at my friend Billy. I was like, do you think anybody would notice if I take out this one sticker and just leave the rest of it?
Oh, wouldn't that be the worst bummer, though, in the world of the person who did buy that book and they're flipping through it when they get home and there's one sticker missing from it?
Or like, they're also a fellow Captain Rex fan, so they're looking for the Captain Rex sticker, and I have the one.
Just an empty space. Yeah, that would be hellish.
Oh, man, yeah, and so I had to put it down. So I feel your love of just being like, oh, yeah, Star Wars, which was the point I was trying to make originally. So, about these Blurg monsters,
yeah.
I think the Blurgs are, like, my new favorite creature name. Like, I love that name, and it kind of reminds me of Pokemon, especially, like, later generations, because I love Pokemon. Don't get me wrong, especially I love the sixth generation. But there's kind of reached a point where you can tell that they're scraping the bottom of the barrel for names. Like, there's a gear, and its name is Clink. And then when it evolves, it's two gears, and its name is Clank. And then when it evolves, it becomes three gears, and its name is Clink Clank. And then there's another one called Klefki, which is a ring of keys, and Chandelier, which is a chandelier.
Of course.
It's like someone like was like, oh, we need to name these creatures. Blurg.
Well, Blurg, you know, back in Twilight Caveman days, or Cave Twilight days, I guess it would be. That was probably how they probably saw those things, and probably the Blurgs went Blurg, and then they would point at them and go Blurg. So it was just a.
What if like Twilight Blurg was meant something like Noble Mare Steed? It's actually like King of the Steeds or like Black Beauty or something.
I like Blurgs. I like creatures with ridiculously huge mouths on them.
Yeah.
They take up 3/4 of their body. They're always great. And I love that one clone. Which clone was it that goes up to
Pat?
Yeah, that's me. I would have been just like, hey, buddy.
Yeah. They kind of remind me also a little bit of the flea monsters too, but they're not quite as flea-y.
Yeah, they're not. Yeah, they seem, although they have teeth like carnivore teeth on them, they don't seem like they're aggressive carnivore creatures. They just seem like I got the vibe off them that they're like camels, whereas they're kind of pissy and and stubborn. But, you know, once you develop a relationship with him, so that's why, you know, the clone couldn't just, like, walk up to him, you know. He wouldn't like him, but he'd like his handlers or whatever.
Yeah.
I love camels, too. There's a great video, you know, one of those little short videos of someone talking and looks at the camel and it just goes, spits right in her face. It's like a reporter. She's like, oh, blah, 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 this cute camel. And he's just like, rah, puh.
Yeah,
I think emus do that too.
Emus do. I think they do spit, if I remember correctly. I never try to get close to the ones that used to live by me.
If anybody wants, and yourself included, wants great entertainment, there was a guy from Australia in the 70s and 80s named Rod Hull. Rod Hull and his extraordinary Australian emu, which was a puppet. And he had a fake arm that looked like it was holding the emu, but of course his arm was in the emu, and he would do bits with the emu, which was a completely evil creature. So look it up on the YouTubes. You'll be entertained for hours.
For hours. And hours. I don't know what I'm doing. This is like one of those episodes, like, I am just like, and to the next point, but there needs to be a transition into this point. I don't know. How do I podcast? Anyway, so, I kind of really like Shyam's line about how he's fighting the Jedi and like, when will he be fighting the Jedi too? Well, it's kind of a bit of foreshadowing, because I think Shyam is a kind of leader who can already see that the Clone Wars isn't going to be really swift like the Senate and the Jedi and the people think it will be. Because in the first couple seasons of Clone Wars, they would have an official webcomic before that led into every episode, and it was up on StarWars.com. And in the Clone Wars official webcomic called Discount, it showed that Wat Tambor was moving into Ryloth just a few months into the Clone Wars. So the Battle of Ryloth is a super early conflict in this war. And because Shyam is fighting on the ground and not in the Senate, like Senator Tal, I think he can see that this is going to be like a super, super long war. And I think Shyam knows politics to see that it's not going to be easy, and that the people will get disgruntled the more and more this war goes on, and that they'll eventually learn to hate the Jedi, which is what ended up happening that led us to Order 66. The war just kept going, and people started distrusting the Jedi, which is why they were okay with Order 66.
Well, the people on the ground always are a lot more, you know, the freedom fighters and the people in the villages, the people who end up becoming the pawns and the victims in war, they're always more cynical of someone saying, yeah, well, you know, we'll have a force in here for a little while after here, and then we'll be moving out, you know. They're the ones who've seen it before, you know.
Yeah.
And even then, like, say you're in the Senate, and you're at the Senate all the time, yeah, you know, an invasion force in your home world for a few months, you don't feel it, you know. But when you're there, they're on the ground. So they're a little more mistrustful and cynical for good reason, out of practicality. Yeah.
So, and then the other note I had, while we're still on this note, I like that this is our first real episode that we're getting into the politics of war. In later seasons of Clone Wars, we really get like really good political episodes. Like, there's an entire episode about how Palpatine steals all the money to make the Empire, and the Senate is like 100% behind him doing it. So, but like early on, like this early on in a kids' TV show, this is very revolutionary storytelling to like address and show politics in this way. Because like really, like I like how they show that both Senator Ta and Shyam Syndulla are both political rivals, and they both are on different sides of this conflict, but they both also want the best for their planet. So, like, neither of them are bad guys. They just wanted different things.
They're forced into it a little bit, too. Once they bomb that village, it becomes apparent that it's like, if immediate action isn't taken, that they're just going to wipe everybody out. So
yeah, they're going to just lose so many people.
Right. So at that point, they're almost forced into, you know, they're forced into negotiating with each other, you know, on their own side, but they're forced into like, all right, packed, agreed. Okay, we go. Cause I mean, literally it goes from bombing of the village to, you know, watching the dance recital to, I mean, as soon as they find out the village is burning, they're on the horn and they come walking out, you know, right to the crowd and they're like, all right, everybody gear up. We're going now. So yeah. That whole decision-making process probably in real time. Well, we probably saw it in about real time. It was under 5 minutes. to mobilize. It's great. That's how you do politics in Star Wars, you know, and they did a more, I mean, the politics are a little more realistic than in the movies, you know, they're more relatable for sure.
Yeah, that's what I like about Clone Wars. Like, this is a kids television show, but they do a better job with the politics, like, than the actual, like, prequels. Yeah. Like, I love the Lego version of The Phantom Menace it was like a little 30-minute special where C-3PO was recalling the prequels. And there's a moment where, like, it showed all the Separatists together, and they're like, yes, we are doing evil things. Why are we doing evil things? I don't actually know. Yeah. Why are we doing evil things? And Count Dooku's like, because I told you to. Yeah!
That way. And it's
with the Senate. Like, they showed the Republic Senate, and they're like, why are we fighting this thingy? Because we were told to. Yay! That's what I love about Clone Wars, because it actually makes the prequels make sense.
Yeah, they get more, in a kid's show, they get more complex political ideas across than in a less convoluted way than the prequels did. And they don't bring it to a dragging halt, you know? It actually adds to the story and deepens and I mean, I can't tell you how many times watching the Clone Wars, you know, the first time through and this run through, that I thought, man, this is pretty pretty hard for a kid show. Yeah. Strong meat for a kid show. You know, they don't show, like, people running through the village burning up or anything, but, you know, a kid watching that is going to go through the same mental process that I was, where he goes, whoa, they burned up the everybody.
Yeah.
That was we saw that village earlier, and it was all just like women and kids and old people hanging out. So it does it pretty deftly, and it does it. I mean, I never remember there being any outcry over this being too much, you know, when it came out. So
yeah, I did take like a few minutes to like kind of Google like kids shows in 2008, kids shows in 2009, and there was very few other things that came even close to this, like on that list. So yeah, yeah, I completely agree. I like how they make politics and make it accessible for children to understand. And like I said last episode, it makes it to where parents can actually have conversations with their children.
Mm-hmm.
And like, so like if they're, you know, I remember when I was very, very young, I had watched the movie The Prince of Egypt. Gorgeous, gorgeous too. Even if you're not religious at all in any way, shape, or form, you should watch this movie because the animation for it is gorgeous. It's the story of Moses. Yeah, like, oh, the animation, it's some of the best 2D animation you will ever see. And there was a parts of the movie, though, when I was a kid that scared me, and my parents were able to sit me down and explain, like, these deeper concepts of religion by using examples from the movie. And that's what I like about Clone Wars, because a parent can sit down and be like, if a kid's, like, for example, like, learning about, I don't know, like, the Civil War or something. Actually, let's do something else. Like, World War II or something.
Yeah,
like
that. Vietnam, and there's a concept, even.
Yeah, and there's a concept that they just don't get. They can actually, a parent can look at Star Wars and be like, hey, do you remember that time where, like, you know, on Ryloth that this was happening? That's kind of like what was happening in World War II. Or, like, you know, or, like, deeper tragedies, like, with current wars. Like, if a kid didn't understand, like, I just love that about the show, is they tackle these deep concepts, but in a way where a child can understand it. While adults watching this going, whoa! The only other thing I had from this section, as I just wanted to note something. When Star Wars Rebels started airing, some fans were really confused by the little Twilight girl in this episode who runs up to Shams and Doola and Liberty Ryloth. Because it was revealed that Hera was Shams' daughter, but a lot of people thought that this little Twi'lek was Hera's sister, or even that Numa was possibly Hera from last episode. Like, she was possibly a young Hera. And in the Rebels Recon episode, The Honorable Ones, Pablo Hidalgo clarified that the little girl was a random villager. Being a political figure, Sham has to kiss babies and hold children while giving inspirational speeches to his men. So that little girl is in no way related to Hera at all.
There's been a lot of confusion. I guess maybe the Twi'leks being such a demonstrative, affectionate race has created some confusion, because there was with Numa last episode, everybody was like, oh, that's her dad, you know?
Yeah.
When it was her uncle.
But like, I guess it was just the way the little girl ran up to him. It was almost like a daddy, daddy kind of run. Like when you see your daddy and you're excited that he's home kind of run.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just wanted to clarify, because it was a confusion for a long time of whether or not that little girl was related to Hera. And a lot of people thought Numa was Hera, which I don't even know if Numa was Hera, but I actually I like Numa for her own badassness in.
And I like having it. Numa being Hera would be a little just too much of a coincidence. I like having her being her own character and going her own way. It reflects more of a huge population of Twi'leks, you know?
Yeah,
all the same people running into each other constantly in Star Wars, you know?
Yeah, that's very true. For being a massive galaxy, everyone runs
into everybody's coming from these same circles of people, you know. So I like it more that she's just another person who has another adventures and life and all that.
And especially since it kind of gives a deeper tell for both Numa and Hera, that both of these women went through the exact same conflict, but they went down two different paths.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that's just adds to the storytelling. So I didn't have anything else for Act 2, did you?
I did not, except that it totally kicked ass.
It really did totally kick ass, because Act 3 is very tiny.
It is. It was almost like stuff happened, and it was almost like an epilogue. It was weird.
Yeah.
How they cut this episode up.
Yeah. Especially like the... I like the parade at the end, which is like, we won. Here's a literally like 20-second parade to show our victory. So, Act 3. Tambor is setting his final play. He pulls the Twi'lek people out of the capital and line them up outside the walls to hold off Windu's attack. Windu and Sham's men move in and see the people. The key is getting across the bridge. Windu ambushes the treasure-carrying takes and sneaks into one. Tambor's greed has him turn the bridge on to get that last shipment of treasure. The droids check the tanks for lifeform, and Windu springs out and attacks them as Commander Pawn starts a distraction. The droids turn off the bridge, and Windu force-throws his men to the other side. In an awesome display of the force, Windu hops from tank to tank to land on the other side. Windu goes for the droids, Rezzer and Stack go for the bridge, Sham and Commander Pawn lead the troops charge. Sham forces the droids while Windu goes after Tambor. Tapas is done with all this and steals Tambor's ship. Dooku orders the bombers to destroy the capital, but Anakin and Ahsoka's air team arrives just in time to destroy the bombers. With Tambor captured, the capital is secure and Ryloth is officially free. Sham thanks Windu and leads a huge parade with freaking clone Stack leading on his burn. The end. I love that. Like, it kind of reminded me of like a few episodes back when we did the Gungan General, and we were talking about how like the clones were like petting like the big force slug,
yeah.
The big slug, and we were joking about how like clones would go riding slugs into battle. Stack kind of got to do that at the end of the episode.
Yep.
He both rode the Blurg into charging, and he like I want to see a scene where Stack has to say goodbye to his Blurg.
A tearful farewell.
I'm sorry, Blurgy. I'll come back.
And the Blurg just goes clomp and eats him.
just like bites off his finger. He's like, oh, good boy.
Man, Mace Windu kicks ass in this one.
Oh, man. That moment from, like, they turn off the bridge to when Windu gets to the other side, like, dude, that's an awesome,
Where he goes from those two ships to the Stapp, and the way he takes over, the physics of it is beautifully done. And then it has that weird force, like, noise go. Like,
yeah, like Obi-Wan had last episode. Obi-Wan had that.
Where it gets quiet and gets all this weird buzz in the air. It was really neat.
Yeah. Oh, that entire sequence was just, Yeah. I think, because a lot of times I always kind of forget, like, what a powerful Jedi Mace Windu is. Because he's such, you know, he's such a wet blanket that we're always just like, ugh,
well,
Windu.
This reminds me of back at the Tartakovsky, the 2D Clone Wars that they did. There's one episode when they did the, I think it was the first season, where they were all, like, 3.5 minutes or 5 minutes. And it was basically Mace Windu taking out an entire droid army, just decimating them, and with this little, and this reminded me of that it's just like, yeah, this guy is powerful. He's definitely the Samuel L. Jackson of Jedi. And it was just a beautiful scene. Plus all the draw, you know, this is how you do it. All the politics and all the character building that they've been doing on this show, and although they haven't really been doing any with Windu, when you get into the battles and stuff, it just makes you so much more invested in it and interested in it. And
yeah,
they feel more earned, you know, so sometimes it can be really, it reminds me of, in the 90s, there was a Starship Troopers cartoon, and basically every episode was just a battle between the bugs. So it was very tactical, and, you know, it was just sort of like army logs, you know, versus the bugs. But it was neat to watch, but you weren't really too invested in the characters because they were just there fighting, you know. There wasn't any real much storyline going along with it. Whereas Clone Wars has been very careful from the very beginning to shade in, even if they only have a chance to do it a little bit at a time, they keep shading in all their characters. So then the further on you get into it, when you get into dust-ups, they just have that much more impact, which is important because you're also dealing with sort of a series that takes place in between movies. So there's a lot of people that, you know, aren't going to die, or, you know, nothing horrible is going to happen to them. So they do a very good job of building up the other characters instead of just building up a bunch of red shirts around, you know, the heroes from the movies. They shade everything in really well.
Yeah, because that's kind of like how I feel about how I always thought about watching Clone Wars, but then also, like, later on Rebels. I have that kind of, like, thing, too, where, like, there are certain characters you know that will make it through. So if you see, like, Anakin, like, in the Lerman episode, Anakin, they crash and he was gravely hurt. Well, we know that he's not going to die.
Right.
He's going to become Vader. But at the same time, it's the story around him. And then you have characters like Ahsoka, who we don't know where she is when the original trilogy starts. And we don't know where she is, actually, even sooner, like Order 66. We didn't know where she was as this was airing. So we're all sitting here going, this is great, but, you know, she's probably going to die. And same thing with, like, Rex and other characters.
Which
and
became so, like, even more heartbreaking the longer the series went. And you actually
waiting for the tragedy. You're just waiting. Because
I'll be honest, I mean, if anybody remembers back at the first episode, I wasn't a big fan of Ahsoka in the Clone Wars movie. I didn't think, I was like, oh, no. And they did a good job of bringing me 180 degrees on that.
Yeah, and now I'm kind of having the same thing with, like, Star Wars Rebels. Like, there are certain characters, like, you know, Leia showed up, we know nothing's going to happen to Leia, and Lando was in an episode, we know nothing's going to happen to Lando.
I love Lando on Rebels. I wish he was on all the time.
He's confirmed back, I think they said he's confirmed back for an episode.
Oh, keep bringing him back. He's great. Billy Dee Williams does a fantastic job on bringing him to life.
But, like, now we're kind of, like, in this, like, same situation where I actually read I posted it on the Two True Freaks Facebook page, but it was a fantastic argument of whether or not Kanan will die based on Yoda's line to Luke that you are the last Jedi. But, of course, you know, that original line came, like, years and years and years ago. Now we're in a new canon. But a lot of people were debating whether or not if it was one of those things of, like, Yoda telling Luke that to kind of push him towards being a Jedi, like, making him think he's the last, or is it true, and Luke is the last Jedi because something happens to Ezra and Kanan. So, like, it was this really interesting argument. So, like, that's what I like about watching Rebels now, because there are certain characters that we know that some characters will make it, but we don't know the fates of our main ghost crew. We yes. don't know if they're going to make it through. We don't know these things, which makes Rebels very... The stakes of Rebels sometimes, I feel like, especially now in Season 2, were a little bit higher than certain stakes in Clone Wars. Because we, like I said, Obi-Wan and Anakin will make it, but Ahsoka didn't. So, well, not didn't, but we didn't know.
Yeah.
I'm rambling now.
Well, I think they created a lot of in the beginning of Rebels, all those characters seem to me, it's like, okay, this guy's sort of a composite Luke Skywalker, this guy's kind of Han Solo and Obi-Wan mixed together, you know, and the ghost is sort of the Millennium Falcon, here's Chewbacca, but he talks, and we got an R2. So they sort of just gave us a dynamic, rough dynamic of Star Wars, and I was like, okay, these characters are pretty good, but they're just sort of versions of other characters, and they quickly did the Dave Filoni thing where they started making all those characters their own people. And
yeah.
Now I don't feel that way at all about them.
Yeah.
They all have started going in all different directions, and some of them unexpected and some of them darker, and it's good. They're doing the same thing they did with Clone Wars, and Dave Filoni someday, I swear he should just be, they should give him a Star Wars movie. A full
numbered
Star Wars movie. I would love
yes.
to see him do the real thing because, man, he gets it. He really gets it. And he's been in the trenches. I would love to see that. Oh, my God, it would be so good.
I would be 100% behind a Dave Filoni numbered Star Wars movie. Or actually, I would love to see Dave Filoni do one of the side stories. You know, like how Rogue One's kind of like a side story, and there's like a Han Solo one coming too, which I am not excited about the Han Solo movie. I don't care.
I refuse to get excited about that or Boba Fett until they come out, and you know, wait and see. We'll wait and see. I'm more excited about the Rogue One movie, especially it's got some weirdness, and I like that Disney now has this thing. Where they're moving, they're working forward, and they have side things going that they can merge their continuities together in the movies, you know. So that and with the TV shows and stuff, they could bring stuff from something from Rebels could show up in a numbered Star Wars movie.
And oh, they already said that season 3 of Star Wars Rebels is going to have ties to Rogue One.
To Rogue One. And Rogue One has, you know, what looks like it might be the Emperor in it, you know. So it's
Vader's already confirmed
for Yeah, Vader's Rogue definitely going to be in Rogue One. It's if they have that time period, Disney's going to use Vader. Disney's going to use Vader.
Yeah.
And that's all there is to it. He's too iconic. But the good thing is, judging by Rebels, oh God, Disney use Vader. Use him all you want.
I saw an article that Vader will be the scariest, most brutal version of Vader that we've ever seen.
It's got to top Rebels because so far the Vader Rebel or the Vader in Rebels is the Vader from Splinter of the Mind's Eye in Star Wars. He's scary. He's just when he walks in, it's just like, oh shit, the boss battle is on. This guy is, you know, this is not in his sympathetic stage. And they got James Earl Jones, and oh boy, you know, I just Scott 2.0 next door to me is working his way towards the end of Rebels, and I just floated the picture of Vader coming down on his TIE fighter. Towards Ezra, you know, holding his lightsaber, and he was just like, oh, shit.
Yeah. Though I did see someone go, like, freaking Skywalker boys are so dramatic. You're already Vader. You're already coming in on TIE fire, but you have to stand on top of the TIE fire.
Your lightsaber ready. Oh, of course you do. You got to scare the hell out. It's just like Batman. You scare the hell out of them first, and then you go kick their ass, too.
I have this just like idea of like Anakin trying to like, or I guess I should say Vader, like Vader practicing this like in the like in like that hangar of one of the Imperial things, and then he's just like, okay, like what's put it in auto drive.
Yeah, all the stormtroopers are like, what the hell is he doing? He's been standing on top of his TIE fighter all day working on that. He's fallen off it three times.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things, like, he'll, like, kind of, like, turn a little bit and be like, no, I don't like that pose, and, like, turn a little bit more and be like, no, that's not good. They can't see me.
He gets fans installed on the top of his TIE fighter to blow his cape just
what
right.
What is that movie? Because it's a historical movie, came out a few years ago. I can't remember the name of it, but it was about a Jewish acting teacher teaching Hitler how to be more charismatic.
Oh, I remember the movie. I don't remember the name of it. I never saw it, but I...
Vader having a guy like that, yeah. Like someone who just like watches him and be like, no,
PR
you need
guy,
to walk.
Yeah.
Like, no, you need to sit like this. No.
Vader could probably just stand there and force choke somebody, but this guy's like, no, you got to put your hand up and make a little gesture like you're choking him. It's way scarier.
Yeah,
I like that.
If you ever start lifting your hand, they're all flinch, like ready for it.
Why am I lifting my hand? I don't have to lift my hand. Just do it. I'll scare the hell out of them.
And he's like, yeah, that's it, Vader, that's it. And like, they're actually like really good friends, and they go out for coffee afterwards. He was like, you did really well today. You're really advancing in your scary acting.
Yeah, the guy, okay, we're gonna walk ourselves through a little scenario here, okay? I'm questioning you. This Death Star is really stupid. Why don't you shut up, you asshole? Okay, that's good. You're showing you're angry at him, but you know you should use something more dignified. Like, I find your lack of faith disturbing.
And you know, like when you're angry, people expect stuff, so it's more scarier. Like when you're quiet, and the fact that they can't see your face is really good. So if you want to, if it makes you feel more free, you can even like stick your tongue out a little bit because they can't see it. So whatever helps you with your method.
See, I wonder if Vader said it's like sunglasses. You can't tell where he's looking. You know, he might be checking out some good-looking Imperial, you know, woman over in the corner, and they're like, Vader, what? Oh yeah. Death Star plans. Like,
all you see about just below the belt, his robe just goes boop.
I don't know if
he might have got burned off.
That looked like that there. Might not have been that the no-no zone might have been if something's going on there, it might be technically assisted. he's got is like a little arm. He's got the same little He's got the same little, you know where I'm going with this, right? He's got the R2-D2 arm that goes into, like, the computer system and spins around all the time. That would be great if Darth Vader could, like, you know, plug into the system and find the plans. Turn away.
But it just looks like he's just standing really, really close to a wall.
Right, exactly.
What are you doing over there, Lord Vader? I'm just painting on the wall. Stop
are you
looking.
Hooked into the comlink again? Cut that out.
Oh my god, yes. I'd be so behind someone like doing a fan fiction or a fan art of like Vader having a PR guy like walking him through acting classes.
Yeah, Robot Chicken might do it someday.
Seth Green, hear us now. No. You have to be like ride in on the TIE fighter. I mean, you drive it in there, but then you have to get out of it, and it looks so undignified.
They're all listening to Two True Freaks, so they all know. They're all stealing our ideas, so that's how we disseminate our ideas into the culture without getting rich.
Yay. Thanks, guys.
Royalty check would be nice, Seth Green.
That would be really great to Seth Green, especially since I've loved you since, like, Buffy.
Yeah, you love
come
us.
On, man. So... Anyway, so, yeah, I didn't have anything else for the rest of this act, did you?
No, ma'am.
Okay, so what did you think about the episode as a whole?
I love this. I think I got the feels on this episode, even without Grievous in it.
Is this your perfect 20, like 10 for 10 or something?
It's not a 10 for 10, but it gets a 9 out of 10 or an 18 out of 20, however you want to do it up. I just really enjoyed this episode. I said why, but it for, you know, in the end, it was just like, it was fun to watch. It was very Star Warsy, and, you know, the way it whipped through, the way it had, you know, Anakin and Ahsoka just sort of on the outskirts and just popping in and just the way it wove the story was very Star Wars-y and very what I love about Clone Wars. So yeah, I really enjoyed this episode.
I actually like always forget how good this episode is, because if I sit down to watch something from the Ryloth Bar, and I said this would be an Ahsoka episode a few weeks ago too. I usually sit down and watch the last episode, The Innocence of Ryloth, so I always kind of forget about this episode, and it has, like, Windu in it, so I tend to avoid those. But this is, like, one of the better ones. I like that we're getting these, like, really heavy political themes so early on in the show to set up how politics are just, how heavy it is in politics and later in the season. Windu is actually super personal in this episode, which is nice, and it's a good Into the Ryloth arc, which were three actual really unique episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave it a 17 out of 20.
Okay, so you're just a half point behind me.
Yeah. I maybe if it was Obi-Wan instead of Windu, it would have been a little bit higher.
This particular episode gave me a little memories at the end where sometimes, you know, the episodes I get seem to come from different sources. And this one, at the end of it, you know, when they're running the credits, they're like, next week, you know, the season finale, blah, 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 and it's Cad Bane and stuff. And I remember the first time I remember seeing that ad when I watched it on TV and thinking like, I don't know. He doesn't look that cool. He looks kind of cheesy. And was I wrong?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're getting into the
wrong,
rise.
Wrong.
Rise of the Bounty Hunters, Season 2.
And this time when I saw the ad, I was just like, oh, yes. Bane's coming.
Oh, man. I think everybody thought that. I think a lot of people were just like, who is this guy? Like, where's Boba Fett?
Yeah, exactly. This guy's just... basically, he's sort of a cowboy-looking Boba Fett stand-in, mm-hmm. is what I thought. And he kind of is in some ways, but boy, he's great.
He's way, like, I think I saw, like, StarWars.com. It might have been StarWars.com. I might be wrong. Maybe it was something like Nerdist or somebody. But they released, like, the top 10 bounty hunters of the Star Wars franchise, and Cad Bane was number one.
Oh, yeah.
Boba Fett was number two.
Oh, yeah. He's way better than Boba Fett.
Oh, God, yeah.
He's got more skills, and he's got a better personality. So he's...
I think Boba Fett's, like, really cool, but, like, you know, I always liked Boba Fett, but I didn't love Boba Fett until the Robot Chicken specials, and then I was like, oh,
well, yeah.
You know, that's like, he has no personality really in the original trilogy. He just looks cool.
Yeah.
Like in the prequels, he's a kid, you know, he's like a little kid and stuff like that. We get kind of his origin, but then that was it. So like when the Robot Chicken like things came along, it actually made him like really funny and cool. So like when I think of Boba Fett, I just think of like, here's my grenade, asshole.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I have a red lightsaber. I got a blue lightsaber. Purple rain. So that's what I think about when I think about Boba Fett. I don't think about the actual character. I think about the Robot Chicken version. And so, like, but even then, it's silly. So, like, I've never really thought that Boba Fett, he's cool, but he's not, like, the coolest. And that's what I love about Cad Bane. He is, I would not be surprised if Cad Bane, like, pops into episode 8 because he's just that smart and that cool and that awesome.
An old, like... Well, the thing about Cad Bane is he seems old, but he's kind of a lizardy-looking alien, so that might just be his skin. He's got sort of alligator skin, so he could, so he could conceivably be alive 30 years later.
Oh, man, like, because we don't know how long their race lives.
Or he could, but there's all sorts of side projects, too, that take place in that original trilogy time.
I would rather see Cad Bane show up in, like, something like Rogue One.
Yeah, or in that time period, or in the Han, he could conceivably show up in a Han Solo or Boba Fett movie, right? You know?
Especially since, oh my God, you're right, I just realized something. Because at Celebration last year, Dave Filoni released a Clone Wars arc that they were in the making of that never got created. And it was a mission with young Boba Fett and Cad Bane. And Cad Bane was showing him the ropes and stuff like that. That could be the Boba Fett movie.
It could be. Oh, my God. That would be great.
Oh, my God. That'd be amazing.
He's his mentor. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Because it would have... Oh, I'm having a fangirl moment. I would love to watch an entire movie of fucking Cad Bane.
Disney, I hope you're listening. You own that Cad Bane right now.
Yeah. Oh my God.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome.
Oh my God. so amazing. Like, there's, like, sketches of, like, them sitting by a fire and, like, him talking, and we already know that they've worked together before, and, like, you know, Aura Singh could show up, and I want it now! I want it now! And if the Boba Fett is not a Cad Bane Boba Fett movie, I'm just gonna throw a fucking brick. I will not accept anything else.
It's a great idea, but it might be skewing your expectations.
Oh, man. Well, we know, I was about to say, like, the makeup might be hard, but look at Voldemort, you know? All they have to do is, like, find his face and, like, give him blue makeup. No, there you go.
That's not an issue anymore these days.
Yeah. Oh, my God. If it's not, I want it so bad. I want it so bad. And, like, I can't. I'm so excited now. Yeah. I'm so excited. I'm going to have my hopes up, and that's going to be terrible.
I don't want to get too Cad Bane-y because we got to save it for the next episode.
Oh, gosh. I'm so excited for next week. I am just uber, uber, uber excited. It's such a good finale. I need to remember that. I want to ask if whether or not this is a good finale for next week. I need to remember that, but I will not remember that.
I'll try.
So, I think try is the key word.
Yeah, that is a key word.
So, as always, if you like what we have to say, if you like who we are, don't write us about how we are as people. We're kind of terrible. But no,
we already know what we are as people. We don't.
Yeah, I'm pretty good. Yeah, I'm good. But if you like the show or if you hate the show, please write us a review on iTunes and don't forget to rate us. It helps people find us, and we'll also read your review on the show. Just keep in mind we record about 10 weeks in advance, so you might have to wait like 2 months for us to read your review. Sorry.
But trust me, if we get one, we'll read it.
Because what are we on? We just did Dooku Captured. Just got released last week.
Yes.
What episode is that?
That was number,
like,
12.
11 or something.
In the
12?
Yes. And the next, the one coming out in 2 days from now is number 13.
Okay, so, and we are just recording this. So yeah, it will take about 10 weeks for us to get to your review. So we apologize, but we do really want to hear from you.
Yeah, we officially have a nine week lag.
Which
lag makes it sound bad, but it's great because we're actually that's a good guarantee that you're gonna get an episode every week because it builds in slack time, downtime, wedding times.
Yeah, I'm about to have like 2 weeks in a row where I'm not gonna be able to record. So,
but don't worry.
Well, I might do like a Wednesday record, but
you'll never notice. When we're gone.
Yeah, you guys won't notice, but we will.
Yeah.
Because I will be off to the side panicking, going, I need to get an episode because if we catch up, oh my god. I'll be off to the side panicking. So where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at twotruefreaks.com, which I assume they might have already found me because they're listening to this podcast, but who knows how they found it. Probably if you're listening in Lucasfilm, go to Two True Freaks and Disney or any kind of major motion picture or creative house, go to twotruefreaks.com where you will get all your nerd ideas for all your movies and books and comics that you need to write in the future for us nerds to watch, because we will tell you exactly what we want to see in Star Wars movies, Star Trek movies, comic books, you name your franchise, we'll tell you how to do it.
Listeners, if you want to see a Cad Bane Boba Fett movie, what I want you to do, if you have Twitter, find the timestamp of what we want for the movie. So, you know, looking at our time, it'd probably be roughly about an hour and 15 minutes. And then tweet it to, like, Pablo Hidalgo or Dave Filoni. And just be like, listen to this point right here.
Yes. We'll start a campaign. Start a change.org.
Yeah. So, anyway.
We need the president to address this.
Obama.
You see Obama sitting in his office going, what is a Cad Bane? No idea.
That sounds cool.
I've heard of Boba Fett.
I don't know. Obama's kind of very pop culture forward, so he might know. I know he saw The Force Awakens, so for all we know, he might be a closeted
Star Wars. I guarantee almost everybody in the Senate, Congress, everybody running for president right now knows at least who Boba Fett is. Probably none of them know who Cad Bane is, though. But
yeah, so if you're a political figure and you know who Cad Bane is, write us a review on iTunes.
If you're a political figure and you know who Cad Bane is, you get our endorsement no matter what your platform is. But you have to write us an essay about why you think Cad Bane is awesome.
And then we're going to get the most like crazy platformer guy out there. Like, I'm all for killing kittens.
Baby Chris. Murder party.
And I'm just going to be like, Chris, this is your fault you fixed it. Well, you can find me. I run our Twitter at JGuysAndJedi. And you can also find me at me.
at me.com.
Yeah, you can also find me at Hope Mullinax on Twitter, and I also write for whatthefangirl.com, so give us a shout out over there. So I just wrote a review of the C-3PO comic, and that's up on WhatTheFangirl. But
I didn't read it because I sort of remember what you were I'm going to read it anyway, but I know what the thrust of it is.
Yeah.
A lot of people have been seeming to be sharing your opinion of the C-3PO comic from what I've read of other people.
Good, because I haven't had a chance to really see what other people thought of it, because I wanted to read it and write my review before reading other people's review, so I haven't seen what anybody else said about it.
I think it was Andrew Leyland said something like, remember how C-3PO had a red arm and you didn't care, and guess what, you still don't care why.
Yeah,
basically it's only a one shot, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a one shot.
Oh, thank god. Oh good, that's I was like, I don't want to buy 5 issues of that.
Jinx, you owe me some barbecue sauce that you told me you would send me from like 12 episodes ago.
Oh, I remember. Yeah, okay, we were talking about that sort of on Facebook. Now I remember what we were talking about. I could get you some Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because you were saying like you had some sweet sauce or something other, some like sweet kind of spicy sauce, and that you were gonna mail it to me. It is like what 12 weeks later, and I still don't have my I still don't have my croissant.
Just we got gallons and gallons and gallons of it where I work, so I'll definitely package some up for you.
I need my croissant, my sweet.
It's actually I didn't make it and design it, although I could if I was gonna send something sauce like that as of my creation, I'm really perfecting gravy making.
Ooh, I love gravy.
We make pork butts a lot at work in the smoker, and I get shoulder bones and just boil these shoulder bones into this gravy and add some wine to it, and oh boy. Good gravy.
I love gravy, but I'm also from the South, so I really like that white gravy that you make out of just flour and sausage.
That's delicious too.
Yeah, I'm from the South.
I always think of that more as a breakfast. That's like I picture that as breakfast on top of sausages. That's how I used to eat it, like as a kid.
Biscuits and gravy, man. Biscuits and gravy. Yep. Love it.
Truck stop staple.
God, I would do anything if I could learn how to make my grandfather's cat head biscuits.
Cat head biscuits.
A cat head biscuit is one of those biscuits that are massive. They're like, you know, like 6 inches long because they're as big as cat heads. We call them cat head biscuits in the South. They're just like those massive, like 6-inch wide biscuits that are just huge. So those are cat head biscuits. My grandfather makes them from scratch, and I try to learn multiple times how to make it, but he's one of those guys that's just like, there's no measurements. He just makes it from memory. And I'm just trying to write it down, so I'm like, how much is that? And he's like, you know, a handful of this. Yep. I'm like, that's not exact. I don't know what that means.
You have to actually, what I would, from a restaurant point of view, that's the person you want to learn from anyway, the people who do it like that, because they've got the magic measurements. The only way you're going to do it is being there with him and have him setting it up and making it, and you setting it up and making it, and you making it alongside of him. In the first 5 times, him going, no, you got to do it like this.
Yeah,
it like this, and it's got to feel like this. And then all of a sudden, you'll feel the dough, and you'll be like, okay, that's right where it's got to be right now to, you know. And you get to spend some quality grandpa time.
Yeah, which I need to. He's probably not enough for making biscuits in much longer, so Well, on that sad note, thanks for listening to Jenkins and Jedi.
Bring a camcorder and put that on YouTube. I would love to have that as a little extra on Jay Guys and Jedi. And now at the end of Jay Guys and Jedi, Hope's grandfather shows you how to make cat head biscuits.
Yeah. Oh, man. So, yeah, I guess until next time, curl up in your wet blankets, and we'll see you with Cad Bane next week.
Yep, curl up in your wet blanket with a bucket full of cat head biscuits and sausage gravy.
And we'll see you next week.
Next week.
Bye.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. TrueFreaks.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
We were finally invited aboard one of these spacecraft, which landed near Ann Arbor, Michigan on October the 24th of 1954. This is a drawing of the craft. As I was leaving the craft, the commander, Soltek, said, "Soon others of your people will be able to have an experience similar to this."